This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Isn't it equal?
Is this created equal? From WDET in Detroit, I'm Stephen Henderson. And with me in the studio is Kerry Jr. II. He is our producer.
Good day, Stephen.
Hey, Kerry.
All right.
So we're getting ready for the big convention. Democratic National Convention next week in Chicago. And all eyes are on Kamala Harris, who's Vice President of the United States and is going to be, by all accounts, the nominee for president. And a guy named Tim Walz, who is the governor of Minnesota and is headed for the spot as the vice president on the Democrats' ticket. And all of the talk right now is about who he is and what he thinks and how he fits with Kamala Harris, how he fits in the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. But today we want to talk more specifically about the fact that he's one of us. He's a Midwesterner. He's the governor of a state that's not that far from Michigan and shares a lot of things in common with us. And when you look at the things that they're doing in Minnesota, some of the success that they've had with their economy, with social policy, I think it's fair to say you could be a little envious if you're sitting here in Michigan. You scratch your head a little and say, well, how'd they do that? How are they accomplishing those things not so far away from where we sit?
I mean, I do think it depends on which side of the aisle you sit on that will determine how you receive the way in which Minnesota's gone about achieving or accomplishing the statistics that we're looking at here. But I do think, you know, looking at Tim Walz as this Midwestern dad, when there's the vibe that he's trying to get, the voters he's trying to court, but then there's also looking at the history of his state and what they've done over the time that he's been governor, but also kind of where that took root to understand what they've done. I think there's this balance between doing proper social policy and then also balancing that with business interests. And that is something I'm curious about understanding, one, how that took root and what are kind of the outcomes. I think we should probably outline a little bit of what you are pointing to, though, Stephen. Like, what are some of those things that Minnesota's doing that you're like, you know what, this is something I think Michigan ought to take on?
Sure. I mean, I think if you start on the economic side, you look at things like their median income, which is about $10,000 to $12,000 more a year than what we have in Michigan, and even more than what the national average is. When you look at the number of corporate headquarters that they have in that state, the things like their GDP, the diversity of their economy, these are all indicators that I think we would want to have in Michigan. The unemployment rate in Minnesota right now is somewhere around 2.4%. It's 4% here in Michigan, so almost double. But, you know, I think you have to combine that also with things like the social policies that they have been able to enact. Things like universal free breakfast in schools, universal pre-K, things that that we are struggling to try to get done here in states like Michigan that they, for whatever reason, have been able to accomplish there. And they've done it also, I think, with an interesting mix of politics. I mean, it is a more conservative state in some ways than Michigan is, but they've been able to hold together these coalitions of liberal interests and conservative interests to be in favor of this. Taxes are higher in Minnesota, for instance, than they are here, and yet they have a better business climate than we do by many accounts. I mean, there are all of these kind of contradictory, or at least seemingly contradictory, stats that jump out at you that I'm just really curious about. Why is that working?
Yeah, that last point really is the one that made me scratch my head, like, how did that happen? How do you make that argument? I know that usually conventionally we hear the argument on the Republican side that less taxes is better and it's better for business and the businesses will leave, or you can't attract business if you have high corporate taxes. But I mean, I think that's what we're here to kind of explore, right? And see if there's a path forward for our state in a similar way.
Yeah. So we've got two really great guests to join us for this conversation. They are both people who work in Minnesota and know a lot about both the politics and the economy of that state. Professor David Schultz is a distinguished university professor of political science and legal studies at Hamline University. And Professor Lewis Johnston is a professor of economics at the College of St. Benedict at St. John's University. Professor David Schultz and Professor Lewis Johnston, welcome to Created Equal.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So, Professor Johnston, I want to start with you, and I want to have you just kind of paint for us a picture of the economy there in Minnesota, the things that are working about that economy, and I guess why they work. As I was saying in the intro, there are some kind of counter indicators that would suggest that maybe you shouldn't be doing as well as Michigan is, things like your tax rates. And yet there are so many indicators from your economy that things are moving and churning at a faster and better rate. I really wonder what is the sort of explanation for that. So start with a thumbnail of what's going on in Minnesota.
Well, thank you. I think it's an interesting story, and a big part of it is just historical circumstance. And what I mean by that is that unlike Michigan, Minnesota didn't participate nearly as much in what we've come to call the second industrial revolution, the creation of the automobile industry and the massive expansion of the electrical equipment industry and the electrification of industry, the things that eventually led to what we call the Rust Belt, originally started as very shiny high-tech stuff. Cleveland and Detroit were the high-tech centers of the first half of the 20th century. Minnesota was kind of behind on that. And so, for example, the things you were discussing a moment ago about Michigan versus Minnesota were actually reversed before roughly 1940, 1950. Minnesota had lower incomes. Minnesota had taxes that were relatively low. But since the Second World War, Minnesota has grown from below to above average. And a big part of the formula, I think, is that since we were behind, we invested in people. We've become what one of our governors called a brain power state. And so starting in the early 1930s, we started investing in education at the primary and secondary level. After the Second World War, we put a lot of resources into post-secondary education with the goal of not only putting total amount of resources into it, but doing it all across the state so that everything isn't just concentrated in the Twin Cities, but that it's spread throughout the state. So I could go on, but I think that's kind of the baseline there. So yes, taxes are relatively high in certain ways, not in all ways, but they were plowed back and invested in people.
Yeah. And the business climate there is robust in a way that ours, I think, would not be described. I mean, we have a pretty good economy here in Michigan, and it is still very dependent on and driven by manufacturing, mostly in the auto sector, but in lots of others. But Minnesota is home to a lot of really big corporations, despite all of these taxes that people pay there, and the corporate tax rate is higher. Would you describe the climate there as pro-business in Minnesota?
I think it depends on the kind of business, and that's another part of the story that I think is very interesting. So, for instance, there's a professor at the University of Minnesota who has done a great job looking at what he calls the headquarters economy, that not only in Minneapolis-St. Paul, but throughout the state, because of this investment in education, we have kind of a critical mass of people who can work in white collar jobs. And so it's a very good place to set up either a headquarters for a company or to have kind of a service, regional service center or something that has white collar employment. On the other hand, if you're an entrepreneur and you're trying to start up a business out of your garage or something like that, there's a lot of complaints about that being very difficult in terms of permitting, in terms of taxation and things like that. And that's why one of the things about Minnesota that's been fortunate is we have a thriving, what I call border economy. So businesses that start up near the South Dakota border, where South Dakota doesn't have any income tax. So you can take advantage of people who are educated in Minnesota, but employ them across the border in South Dakota. We do the same thing along the border with Wisconsin and North Dakota as well.
Wow, wow. Professor David Schultz, I want to bring you into the conversation here and have you talk about how the politics there in Minnesota make this economic picture possible, this economic picture where you have all of this kind of capital opportunity, you have robust business climate, you have high median incomes, but the flip side of that is that you have this investment agenda that costs people more money, things like higher ed, things like the social safety net, universal free breakfast, for instance, and driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants, and all of these things that are seen as very progressive. How do the politics there make these two poles of our politics kind of marry each other, I guess, in some ways in Minnesota? Or is it just a fight that that ends up, resolving itself with the liberal side winning more?
There's a little bit. Let me answer your question a couple of different ways and go back to something Lewis said. And I want to key in on a date, which is 1944, which is close to his point about saying something changes in Minnesota after World War II. And 1944 is tremendously important because prior to 1944, Minnesota would have been dominated by the Republican Party. And for the most part, Democrats were not doing well. Mm-hmm. But what happened is that in 1944, there were two political parties, the Democratic Party and the Farmer Labor Party. They kept splitting the votes prior to 44. And Hubert Humphrey, who eventually became, a vice president, famous senator, ran for president, he helped forge a unity of the Democratic and Farmer Labor Parties into what we call DFL, Democratic Farmer Labor Party, our Democratic Party. And that, I think, is one of the big transformations longer term, where now it created a pretty significant coalition mm-hmm. across rural and urban Minnesota to enact a variety of public policies that really kicking in the 1960s and especially in the 70s were very, very progressive. So that's part of it. It's the ability of bringing together under the Democrats a very diverse portfolio of interest. But at the same time, in the 1970s, post-Watergate, the Republican Party in Minnesota changes its name from the Republican Party to the Independent Republican Party to kind of distance itself from Watergate, Richard Nixon. And the Republican Party at that point is actually a quite moderate, quite centrist party. Mm-hmm. And for about 25 years, I would say there was a pretty good consensus, but mostly dominated by Democrats in order to be able to lay out a lot of these policies. In a few minutes, we need to talk about what's called the Minnesota Miracle, mm-hmm. which happens in the 1970s, which is really the foundation of modern Minnesota. So there's been this kind of political coalition and consensus. But I'm going to say in the last 20 years, and especially in the last few years, what's really happened to allow for the enactment of a lot of these progressive policies is the fact that Minnesota has at this point is dominated by Minneapolis, St. Paul, much in the same way that Detroit dominates population wise Michigan, mm-hmm. but even more so the metropolitan area is about 55% of the population in the vote, and it votes very liberally. And what's happening is that the liberal voting patterns of Minneapolis-St. Paul have really come to drive Minnesota politics in the last 10 to 15 years. And that really, I think, has led to the dominance and the enactment of a lot of the progressive policies that we see more recently, and especially what happened in the last couple of years, where in 2022, the Democrats in Minnesota achieved a trifecta.
Sure.
Democrats controlled the governorship, controlled both houses of the legislative chamber, and the state was lucky to have a nearly $18 billion surplus. Put all that together, and it really was a recipe for a quite progressive move that the state undertook in the last 18 months.
Yeah, yeah. We want to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about Minnesota, the state where vice presidential nominee Tim Walz is the governor. We're talking about what's working in Minnesota. It's a state not far from ours. It's kind of similar to us. It's part of the same region of the country. What's going right in Minnesota that we might take a look at here in Michigan? We'd also love to get going with you on the phones and on social. Give us a call. Let us know what you make of Governor Tim Walz. In the next segment, we're going to talk a little more about what he has done since he was governor in Minnesota and how he has been politically successful in that role and built the economy there. What do you make of his nomination? What do you make of his personality, which is quite colorful? Give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Created Equal, or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. What do you think of shows like Created Equal and the rest of WDET's lineup? Every so often, we actually ask you that question, and now is a time that we are asking again. If you go to WDET.org/survey, you can let us know how we're doing, what you think of all of this programming, things that you like, things that maybe you don't like. And if you fill out the survey, you're going to get a chance to win some WDET goodies, and you'll help us keep the public in Detroit Public Radio. Okay, we're back with more Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and we're talking about Tim Walz, the now presumptive vice presidential nominee for the Democratic Party here in 2024. That will happen officially next week in Chicago during the party's national convention. We're talking about the fact that Tim Walz is a Midwesterner like us. He is the governor of a state that is not far from ours and is in some ways kind of similar. So why are the outcomes in Minnesota so different than what we experience here in Michigan and different from what you'd see in some other Midwest states? I think it's an opportunity, his presence on the Democratic ticket, to really look at ourselves a little bit, wonder what they're doing in Minnesota that we might borrow. We've got two great guests with us helping us learn a little more about Minnesota and about Tim Walz. Professor David Schultz is a distinguished professor of political science and legal studies at Hamline University in Minnesota. Professor Lewis Johnston is professor of economics at College of St. Benedict at St. John's University. We want to hear from you as well on the phones and on social. What do you make of Tim Walz, someone we have all been getting to know a little better since he was named to the Democratic ticket? What do you think of what he's done as governor of Minnesota? Is it convincing to you? Is it a reason that you might cast your vote for the Harris-Walz ticket in November? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag created equal or at WDET. Okay, I want to talk a little more specifically now about Governor Tim Walz and the way he fits into the context that both of you provided in the first segment, one about the economy in Minnesota, how it was built, how it functions, the other about the politics. Since Tim Walz has been governor, he's had quite a run in terms of getting some things done on the social policy side that I think are impressive. You know, I said a little earlier that, you know, the things that he's, some of the things that he's done, but I want to name just a couple more. Free breakfast and lunch, as I said, for all Minnesota school children. You've got legal recreational marijuana. Abortion was codified into law. Abortion rights were codified into law. There's free college for low-income students, paid sick time and family leave for workers, and, as I mentioned before, driver's licenses and health insurance for undocumented immigrants. That's quite a bit. Professor David Schultz, how has Tim Walz been able to affect that kind of change, and how does he fit into that political history you were talking about there in your state?
Okay, so where he fits in, as again, going back to it, I was mentioning before we went on to break, that one of the big transformations in Minnesota way before him was, again, 1971, mm-hmm. and Lewis had hit at this earlier, is when the Democrats, who more or less had somewhat control of the state legislature, but really was kind of bipartisan, we restructured the tax policy of the state of Minnesota, introduced a sales tax, but then also introduced a variety of redistributions on the taxes, including providing more state money for education. And that's really the foundation right there, the foundation for modern Minnesota. It's called the Minnesota Miracle in Minnesota as a result of it. And where Walz now fits into this, it's in some sense, people describe what happened in the last 2 years as the second Minnesota miracle, that when the Democrats got elected in 2022, again, it was a Democratic Party that really was fairly progressive. And if I can sort of use the analogy of, I don't know, maybe a high tide or something, you know, Governor Walz, when he was Congressman Walz, was a centrist member of Congress from southern Minnesota, 100% rating from the NRA. Almost nobody would describe him as liberal. And I think what happened is, in part, he moved with the Democratic Party. He supported and signed into legislation a lot of the initiatives put together by a very progressive Democratic, you know, coalition in the state. I'm not saying his leadership wasn't important, because it was, but to a large extent, he evolved politically and became with the Democratic Party, and became a very articulate spokesperson for progressive politics. 6 years ago, when he runs for governor the first time, he's talking about being the candidate for One Minnesota. We're all in it together, working across party lines. But in the last 18 months, he's taken a much more progressive line, saying that, listen, you elect Democrats, this is what you get. You can end polarization. You can end disagreement by supporting Democrats. And so he's moved to the left with the party, and with that become articulate in terms of describing what can happen when progressives and Democrats get elected.
What about the backlash, or is there much backlash from more conservative circles? I mean, as you point out, you know, Minneapolis-St. Paul is such a big part of the electorate there in Minnesota, but geographically it's pretty small, and you've got lots of rural areas, right. Agricultural areas all throughout the rest of the state, and they are pretty conservative. In fact, the percentage of registered Republicans in Minnesota is actually higher than it is here in Michigan. So in some ways, it should be a more conservative state. How has he managed to is he bringing the conservatives along, or is the liberal part of government there just so powerful that it can do what it wants without consequence?
Yeah. First off, remember, both times that he got elected, You know, the first time he got elected in 18, it was with about 54% of the vote. The second time, 2 years ago, about 52.5% of the vote. So it's not like he's winning overwhelming victories, you know, in terms of 60%, 70% or something like that. We are a divided state. We have 87 counties. Waltz wins 12 of the 87 counties, but he wins the counties that matter if you're a Democrat, mostly, again, in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And I would say that the Republicans are clearly very, very critical of him. If you read from several organizations who are conservative here, they would be describing Minnesota as going to an economic hell in a handbasket. You know, they would be saying that, oh, things are horrible for businesses. Businesses are flocking and flying out of the state like there's no tomorrow and so forth like that. Not a lot of evidence for that in terms of the argument. But I think if we were to say Minnesota is partisanly divided by like just about every other state is in the country, that's accurate. And two, Waltz has been able to do what he's been able to do because what? He's got the support of majorities of Democrats in both houses of both chambers of the of our legislature. And those two chambers are stacked by Democrats who really are fairly far to the left at this point. And in an era of winner take all politics, one of the things that Republicans are complaining about is the fact that they're being shut out of the legislative process. Well, on the other hand, they're also not really offering much in terms of, let's say, an agenda to work from. It's sort of cut taxes, government is bad, but not much more beyond that.
Professor Johnston, I want to bring you back into the conversation here and have you talk about the way Tim Waltz has managed the economy there. And again, I mean, you guys are doing really well with things like corporate headquarters. Just I'm going to read just a few. Aon, Target, Siemens, United Health Group, Best Buy, Carlson, 3M. Those are very big companies. And we would, of course, I think, like to have some of them here in Michigan as well. At the same time, you know, as I pointed out, you know, the taxes there are complicated and are higher than they are here in Michigan. What does business make of Tim Waltz and his approach? Have they been buying this idea of the investment agenda that your taxes are higher, but we're going to create a population here that is going to be better for your company, better for you as an employer, better for you as a corporate citizen? How does that relationship work?
David mentioned that the rural-urban split and that. There's also a split between big business and small business, and I think that's really important. You articulated something really, really nicely there about, you know, these taxes and these spending programs are going to make it better for you to make business. That's very appealing to companies like Target, like Best Buy, or to companies that are starting up in areas like medical technology and things like that, or some high tech. It's not attractive, though, if what you want to do is set up a business in small retail in a medium to small sized town in Minnesota, or if you want to set up a manufacturing facility that employs relatively low wage labor. That is just not going to fly in Minnesota very well. And so you get very much a split about what kind of economic policy is. And again, building off what David said, I think that's been part of why the Republican policy agenda has been difficult to articulate, because I don't think they can pull together a coalition of business that says, here is what we want, because what 3M wants versus what someone on Main Street in, say, St. Cloud, where I live, isn't necessarily the same. Cutting taxes isn't necessarily what one company in the Twin Cities and another in Rochester wants. And so that's been hard. The other thing that I think's been really important is building off this idea of the Minnesota miracle. The Minnesota miracle of 1971 came about because of Minnesota's tremendous growth between the end of the Second World War and the late 1960s. This second one, if we're going to call it that, is the same kind of phenomena. Minnesota, especially starting in the mid-1990s, benefited tremendously from the end of the Cold War and the high-tech boom. And so, as you mentioned, by 2022, we had very large budget surpluses. And the question was, what are we going to do with them? And with the Democratic control of both branches of the legislature and the control of the governor's office, they doubled down on the idea of investing in people rather than cutting taxes and hoping that things would happen.
Yeah. Professor Schultz, I also want to talk about the diversity there in Minnesota, the racial diversity, and
right.
the fact that Minnesota is changing in terms of its diversity, is growing more diverse, which makes it harder, I think, to get broader consensus and make the case for resource sharing. Talk about what's going on that front and how Governor Waltz has managed it.
Sure. So we should take us back to, let's say, approximately 40 years ago again. And if we were to look at U.S. Census data, Minnesota would be about 92% white Caucasian. Mm-hmm. You know, the image of us being a state mostly of what, Germanic, Scandinavian descent would mm-hmm. be a pretty good caricature or picture of the state. But now, according to the most recent census in 2022, it's a state that now has moved from roughly 8% people of color to about 23 to 24% people of color, mostly concentrated in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And so the racial composition has changed. Some people may not realize that in Minneapolis, for example, we have, I think, the largest concentration of Somalians.
Sure.
Outside of Somalia. Yeah. I know Detroit has a large population too, Arabic descent.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have a large Asian population, Hmong and so forth, and Latino. And that changing demographics also has politically made it difficult at times to be able to forge consensus. But to a large extent, at least in the Twin Cities, we're seeing that the new populations, the new Minnesotans, are somewhat integrating into the political order. But you're hitting at, I think, one of the big problems also in the state of Minnesota. Remember, we're unfortunately the state of George Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that 4 years ago, George Floyd was murdered by a police officer, on the streets. And, you know, it was a international story.
Yeah.
And I mention it because I think one of the challenges for the state of Minnesota is the fact that across way too many markers, there are significant racial disparities in Minnesota in terms of income, wealth, education, graduation, home ownership, employment, and so forth. And we rank among the worst in the country in terms of that. And I just mention this because I think, and again, Lewis can speak to this even better than I can, is that I think one of the challenges facing Minnesota in the future is that with these enormous racial disparities that we are seeing, that if we don't figure out a way of addressing them, not just as a political problem here, but economically, this is going to be a major, major issue that could impact future growth in Minnesota. Now, in terms of what Waltz is doing, I think the administration has tried programs, as you mentioned, you know, free school lunch programs.
Mm-hmm.
We've tried to do more in terms of making some kind of police reform, some housing reform. But I would say that the record in terms of addressing racial disparities is not one of the stellar stars for either Waltz or for the state of Minnesota.
Before I go to Professor Johnston, what has he done wrong? What do you feel he's failed to do, or has he made real errors?
I would say more the fact that the policies are just not there to address, I think, the entrenchment of racial disparities. And what I mean by that is that, I hate to say this, but I will, is that I don't think there is a bipartisan consensus really in the state of Minnesota that these racial disparities need to be addressed. Hmm. There's sort of an acknowledgement, yeah, we have them, et cetera, but when I look at sort of the public policies, the efforts across the state to really tackle some of these tough questions. And again, I'll confess and say, I don't know what the answer is. I see less effort being put into addressing those than I think there should be.
Yeah. Professor Johnston, what we're talking about here, it gets bumps up against this idea of the Minnesota paradox, something I've read a little about in preparation for our conversation, this idea that, yeah, things are going very well in the state overall, but that for non-white Minnesotans, it's the picture is very, very different. I wonder what you make of the economic side of that, and also what Governor Waltz has done.
Well, I think it is the problem, and David put it well, which is there's no consensus on it right now, and in fact, neither political party is really addressing it directly. One of the things that Minnesota's economic policies have done over the last 70 years, as I mentioned, is invest in people. But one of the things we've avoided doing is what you might call obvious redistribution, in the sense of, okay, we're going to give free breakfast and lunch to every kid. We're not going to target it to certain areas, or we're going to make sure that all Minnesotans who earn under a certain amount of money can get 2 years of college for free. We're not going to have any kind of obvious distinctions. Anybody who meets those criteria, and those work up to an extent, but there are certain problems that have deep historical roots that we just can't solve by those kinds of things. Redlining affecting the way that real estate was bought and sold in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and actually throughout the state. The way that projects like freeways blasted through whole areas of the Twin Cities and destroyed neighborhoods. We've basically said, well, those are in the past, and we got to move forward now. Well, I think there's a lot of that kind of reckoning economically that needs to be done, that needs to be acknowledged. And Governor Waltz, his phrase, I think David mentioned it, of running on one Minnesota, was partly that of avoiding that issue. When he was nominated, David's the political science expert, but my memory is that when Governor Waltz ran in 2018, he didn't get the DFL nomination, in part because he wasn't perceived as liberal enough.
Wow.
And so, he won in the primary running on this one Minnesota idea. But part of his appeal, I think, has been that, well, I'm not as far out to the left as some of those other people. Yeah. I don't think he says that, but that's kind of the idea.
It's implied,
and certainly in terms of economic policy, it's like, well, I'm just reasonable. I want to be able to invest in people. And I think that's a very important part of his economic policy brand.
Yeah, go ahead, Professor Schultz.
Yeah, I was going to say, Lewis's memory is exactly correct here, is that there was two candidates, for governor, lieutenant governor, who ran who got the party nomination as the progressive. And there was another gubernatorial nominee who didn't get the nomination, and a lieutenant governor who were the most conservative. And I don't want to quite say he was the Goldilocks candidate. Remember like the Goldilocks story? This one's too small. This one's just right. But he ran in the primary as the centrist. There's no question about it. And gets elected as a centrist. And then also running again in 2018, he runs as a centrist in the state of Minnesota against a very, very conservative Republican. And the same thing, 2 years ago, wins against a very, very conservative Republican. But you're right, he's describing himself as sort of a moderate with, again, across the board policies, which in some cases are politically very palatable. You build a broad consensus where everybody's going to say, yeah, free school breakfast and lunches, that's a good idea. We don't want kids to be hungry. But what we've not seen in the state of Minnesota is a consensus on targeting specifically programs that deal with racial disparities. And I would even argue a little bit further is that we could do a much better job in terms of even the economic disparities, although again some of the policies help, but really it's the racial disparities issue, and there just is not even within the Democratic Party, let alone across the state, any serious debate on that issue in terms of how to how to ameliorate those issues. But Waltz, I think, was good. But good in terms of saying, I'm the reasonable person. And again, the last 2 years or the last 6 years, he's not been the initiator of the policies. He's been sort of the responder.
The facilitator, kind of, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why I said that. He moved to the left as the Democratic Party moved to the left, and he was willing to sign the legislation that was put on his desk.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We need to take another quick break. When we come back, we will continue this conversation with Professor David Schultz and Professor Lewis Johnston, both from Minnesota, talking to us about Governor Tim Walz and the things that go on politically and economically in that state. And we are going to get to you, the listeners, on the phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag created equal, or at WDET. We will be right back with more Created Equal. We're talking about Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota, the presumptive vice presidential nominee for the Democrats here in 2024. We're talking with two professors from Minnesota, where he is governor, about his record there, the things he's accomplished, the things that work in Minnesota, and whether they're lessons for Michigan or now for the nation. We've got Professor David Schultz with us. He's a distinguished university professor of political science and legal studies at Hamline University in Minnesota. Also with us is Professor Lewis Johnston. He's a professor of economics at College of St. Benedict, St. John's University. We want to hear from you as well on the phones, 313-577-1019. What do you make of Tim Walz? Are you excited about his addition to the presidential ticket? What kind of things, what kind of influence do you think he might have over Kamala Harris and the Democrats? Let's first go to Kyle in Ypsilanti. Kyle, welcome to the show.
Hey, everyone.
Hey.
First off, I do want to say I'm a little annoyed that everyone keeps talking about these Minnesota miracles and not referencing Prince once. So if we can work on that in the future.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Kyle. That's on me. That's totally on me. Yeah. I'll fix that.
Okay.
Mea culpa. Mea culpa. Okay.
I don't really have a great sense of how Tim Walz and his policies might transfer federally, to be honest. And I'm not really even sure of what Kamala Harris's policy platforms are.
Hmm.
I'm voting for her because I always vote Democrat, A. B, I'm voting against Trump, and those are compelling reasons. But I don't really have a sense that I'm voting for Kamala and Tim Walz yet. I'm more voting against Trump at this point. I'm wondering if you could shed some light on how the Minnesota policies that he's enacted could transfer federally.
It's a great question, Kyle, and it's something I think that you'll see the ticket try to articulate maybe next week during the convention and certainly going into the fall. But I'll give both our guests a chance to answer that as well. Professor Schultz, what about the political approach that Walz has taken would apply in a national context?
That's a good question here in terms of, because again, I think a lot of what Walz has done, as I pointed out before, has been a confluence of a lot of good luck that has come together.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the Democrats had a strong coalition based out of a very liberal Minneapolis, St. Paul, Twin Cities area to push an agenda. And the fact that we were experiencing, partly as a result of one-time money, a nearly $18 billion surplus, which helped fund, at least provide the seed money for a lot of programs. I don't see something parallel on the national level or again, you know Michigan way better than I do. I don't see a parallel there in terms of what to do. But if we were going to get beyond beyond sort of the political issue to the policy issue. And again, Lewis can talk more about this here. Again, I think one of the most important things is a long-term payoff is if the United States did a much better job and Michigan did a much better job investing in early childhood education, K through 12. Again, it's not a short-term payoff. This is a long-term state commitment, a national commitment. But I think if Harris and Waltz were to say it's time for the United States to really, I'll use the line from Minnesota, to make the United States the brain power country again, that I think would be a very important move.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, and it is a point of distinct contrast between Minnesota and Michigan. Voters here will remember when Rick Snyder, the last Republican governor, was elected. He said he wanted to do two things. One was get the budget under control by controlling expenses. They were out of control. He had a lot of overspending. But he said that once he had stabilized government and the economy, that he wanted to move to an investment agenda. That never happened. He did things like cut taxes, end tax credits and things like that, but he never got to the point of reinvesting in things like education in a new way, flipping the priorities of the state. We still spend more on prisons in Michigan than we do on higher education, a stat that always blows my mind. When I think about it, we just have not gotten there. And even with a Democratic governor who followed him, and she now has majorities in both houses of the legislature, we have not been able to get there. So, I mean, that right there explains a lot, I think, of the difference. Professor Lewis Johnston, I wonder if you can talk about, again, that economic approach there and whether that applies nationally, what they're doing in Minnesota. Yeah,
I do. And I think this is the opportunity to use a little historical parallel. Hubert Humphrey ran for president in 1968 in the shadow of Lyndon Johnson. And Hubert Humphrey, of course, was a Minnesotan, as David pointed out earlier. I think Harris needs to distinguish herself that way too. Biden's economic policy has very much been one focused on particular industries and particular jobs and nurturing those. The idea that if we invest in the Green New Deal and things like that, that will generate the jobs that will then generate the prosperity. I think what I'm saying, and I think David is saying too, is that what Minnesota has done and what the nation could do, and even Harris Waltz could embrace, is we're not going to try to direct what ends up growing in terms of industries in the United States. What we're going to do is we're going to invest in the people of the United States, and through their creativity and ideas, they're going to generate the new businesses and the new jobs that create a better society. It's a very different perspective, and that's kind of the way that Minnesota has gone, and that's why there's been a lot of policy splits in Minnesota, because there are a lot of people, especially in the Republican Party, who want tax credits directed towards businesses, who want tax policy aimed at stimulating particular industries, and the general Minnesota public policy thrust has been, no, we're going to invest in people, and businesses are going to come out of that.
Yeah, yeah. Kyle, really appreciate the call and the comments. I want to quickly go to Alan. Alan, we're running out of time, but I wanted to get you in here. Go ahead.
Yeah, just a couple things. I grew up in the Twin Cities. At that time, there were about 2 million in the metro area. Currently, there are over 3 million. So contrast that to Metro Detroit, which pretty much has been stagnant population growth. A couple of other points, the regional cooperation in the Twin Cities is much greater. They have something called the Metropolitan Council, and here there just isn't a lot of good regional cooperation, particularly the suburban counties.
There's a lot of cannibalization of of our resources here. I want to give both our guests a chance to respond to that, but we are running out of time. So David Schultz and Lewis Johnston, it was really great to have both of you here to get us to understand and know Tim Walz in Minnesota a little better. Thanks so much for being here on Created Equal.
You're welcome.
That is going to do it for us here on Created Equal. Remember, you can still go take our WDET survey at WDET.org/survey. Let us know how you like Created Equal. Maybe you don't like things that we're doing here and have some suggestions. What do you think of all the other great programming that we offer you here on WDET? WDET is produced by Carrie Jr. II and David Lyons. The show is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.